Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to a special edition of the Freedom Writers Podcast. As a novel coronavirus, COVID-19, continues to spread in the United States and over 200 countries globally, we are continuing our coronavirus miniseries. This week, we are joined by an award-winning broadcast journalist and my dear friend, Steve Hartman. Steve is an Emmy Award-winning reporter with CBS News and is currently the Teacher in Kindness 101 for CBS. His faculty members in this dynamic virtual classroom are his three children, George, Emmett, and Merrill. Steve has always been a glass half full kind of reporter. So I know that his positive insights into the character and kindness of everyday people will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. Today's guest, Steve Hartman, has been a part of the Freedom Writers story for over 20 years. The Freedom Writers and I met Steve in 1998 while he was working for our local CBS station here in Los Angeles. It was the first time that television cameras came into room 203, and footage from Steve's segment now opens our PBS documentary, Freedom Writers, Stories from the Heart. In the years since that segment aired, Steve has remained a close friend. He hosts the On the Road segments for the CBS Evening News, which brings him across the country, showcasing stories of hope and kindness to share with audiences disheartened by the otherwise depressing news of the day. Steve has always had a special place in his heart for uplifting news. And as he puts it, it is his passion. So as we all brave the current chaos surrounding the spread of COVID-19, it seemed only fitting that Steve would find a way to elevate an audience during these trying times. In early March, as schools were closing, businesses shut, and lockdowns put in place, Steve had a brilliant idea. He would create educational material for students struggling to stay positive in the middle of the madness. He and his three children started teaching Kindness 101 educational segments that he posts on CBS.com and YouTube to highlight the bright side during dark days. With so many schools shut, Steve and his family are committed to constructing more Kindness 101 virtual classes through the end of the school year. Each class teaches us the best of humanity, be it examples of empathy, altruism, or optimism, so students can envision what they want to be when they grow up. The outpouring of gratitude from teachers and parents alike is awe-inspiring as he continues to celebrate the everyday heroes among us. Without further ado, here is my conversation with a man of great conviction and character, Steve Hartman. There are moments in life where you get to become somebody else's doppelganger. And for this particular interview, I'm very excited that the teacher gets to become the reporter, and the reporter is now the educator, the teacher. Our guest today is an esteemed Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist with CBS News, and his popular piece, On the Road, is viewed by millions across the globe. But for today, my guest is a teacher of Kindness 101. He has transformed his office at home into a virtual classroom, and his co-faculty members are none other than his three children, George, who is 11, Emmett, who is 9, and sweet little Merrill, who is the scene stealer, is 6 years old. And what Professor Hartman now does is he speaks to children everywhere about what do you want to be when you grow up. The words he has chosen, the themes that he brings to life, will actually bring tears to your eyes. Words like character and altruism. He even explains what that big fancy word is to a small child. Courage, optimism, gratitude, honesty. And as we watch and weep. We look at ourselves. We look at our loved ones. We embrace family and faith. And we wish every teacher spoke to us in the way Steve Hartman speaks to us. So he has reimagined what it means to go to school during a pandemic. So it's without further ado, I am so excited to be the reporter speaking to the teacher. I'd like to welcome my dear friend, Steve Hartman.
Thank you so much, Erin. It's great to be with you.
So for our listeners around the globe, you and I live about 3,000 miles apart, and we both have states that acted early in America when the pandemic was upon us. California, where I live, was one of the first states to have a stay-at-home shelter-in-place mandate, and New York was hot on our heels. So both of us have been in our homes since the beginning of March, and what you did was absolutely brilliant. As a newscaster, you are Where's Waldo. You travel daily, weekly, monthly. You have more frequent flyers than even me. And you realized with the pandemic, you weren't going to be jumping on a plane. You weren't going to be interviewing in real time due to masks and gloves. So you recreated the ability to tell stories to a global audience. Can you tell me what was going through your mind at the beginning of March, before Kindness 101 hit the airwaves on Monday, March 23rd?
Well, I'm the guy who normally fills the time at the end of the newscast. So when the pandemic struck, I was immediately searching for some kind of relevance. I mean, what do they need me for? But I thought of two things at that moment that the country probably needed more than anything. And those two things were kindness and babysitting. So I figured if I could help parents by taking their kids for 20 to 30 minutes a day, and at the same time teach kindness, well, then I matter. And that's really what I was searching for in that moment, was to matter.
Steve, what I'd love to do for our audience is to showcase one of your original On the Road pieces that so masterfully demonstrates what Kindness 101 is.
Well, I never pick a favorite story because to me that's kind of like picking your favorite child. I love them all dearly. But when pressed, if I had to pick one story that kind of sums up all of them, is emblematic of why I do what I do, the kind of stories I like to tell, this would be it, the story of Nora and Dan.
Not long ago, in a cemetery outside Augusta, Georgia, a loving couple was buried. The wife buried below this white bouquet. The husband buried above in a mound of grief.
Took me totally by surprise.
82-year-old Dan Peterson says after Mary died, he fell into a deep depression. Spent days just staring out at the squirrels.
What were you living for?
I was trying to figure that out, frankly.
You had no purpose?
No.
Were you just waiting to die?
Yeah.
For 6 months, it was just that bad.
And then one day you go to a grocery store.
It all changed inside this Publix.
Dan was nearing the end of the canned vegetable aisle. He hates grocery shopping, and by all accounts, the expression on his face confirmed his aggravation. But that's when this unapproachable man was approached by a 4-year-old girl named Nora Wood.
In the security footage, you can see Nora randomly reaching out to him. Her mom, Tara, says it was quite embarrassing.
She stood up and said, "Hi, old person, it's my birthday today."
Old person?
Old person.
Hi, old person.
She says this to this cranky old man?
Yeah.
And then had the audacity to demand a hug.
I said, "A hug?" I said, "Absolutely."
Nora got her hug and then asked her mom to take a picture of her with her new friend.
She zeroed in on him like a missile. And she didn't want anything from him. She just wanted to make him feel loved and give him a hug. And his little lip quivered and he was teared up and it was just sweet.
And I said, "You don't know. This is the first time for quite a while that I've been as happy."
That all happened a couple months ago. and his grin has only gotten wider since.
Hi, sweetheart. Come in. Come in.
Today, Nora visits at least once a week.
So how's my sweetie, huh?
And every time, it's the grocery store all over again.
I knew I was going to get a hook. Oh, it's unbelievable. Totally unbelievable.
It's a bridge.
It's a bridge. Oh, okay.
Dan does have grandkids of his own, but they're all grown and gone. And Nora does have grandparents. But her mom says this is a completely different kind of bond that almost defies explanation.
She fell asleep holding a picture of them. What?
To Dan, it's equally miraculous, but far less mysterious. He believes Nora is, quite literally, an angel.
Okay. She opened me to a love that I didn't know existed.
Dan, let me ask you. When your wife died, you felt like you didn't have any purpose anymore. Do you feel like you have a purpose now?
Of course. Nora, watching her grow up, I know I made room in my heart for a lot more.
What I love about each episode, a lot of people are at home binge watching The Tiger King. They tore through every single Netflix series. And I, the true teacher, I have binge watched every single one of your Kindness 101 episodes. Literally, I have been
watching. Every single one?
Every single one. And I highly recommend all of our listeners do the same. You will laugh hysterically. And you will weep, and everything in between.
Most of that is due to my daughter.
And your daughter is, she's delicious.
Yes.
I want to reach through the screen.
Her job initially was to hold the signs. And then she started talking. And then my son noticed, how come Meryl's like in the center of the frame now, and you're off to the side, Dad? It was like Ed McMahon taking over the Tonight Show. It was, and eventually, I think by the final class, I won't even be there.
Well, what's so great is, for those of you who have not been exposed but are going to binge watch afterwards, his fabulous son, George, is on the computer fielding questions live. Emmett is the cameraman, but he's kind of like the comedy, because there's a lot of scenes of him rolling his eyes and kind of disgusted with your jokes. I love that we get the eye rolling and the shoulder raising of your son. And then you've got Meryl, who is so innocent and sweet, but she has like these little zingers. She's like your front man.
Yeah, she's too good to be true. I mean, she'll be a teacher one day. I mean, she's born to do this. She's 6 years old, and for whatever reason, every time I forget to make a point or I don't say something completely right, at 6 years old, she's right in there to reinforce the lesson and say just what needs to be said. This blows me away as much as anybody else. I was not prepared for that.
She also is your prolific sign maker. I love every single sign. Even friendship had a little ship.
Yes.
So I love that she makes all your signs.
Yes, she's definitely into it. And she's taking the classes while she's teaching them. They have really, it's been fun for me because I've seen the impact it's had on my own kids, especially Meryl. We did something on courage and what courage really is, which is, we talked about how it's really failure. Courage is being able to fail and get back up and do it again. And she'd been wanting to ride a bike but didn't have the courage to do that. And after the class, she went out there and she got on her bike, and now she's got a mountain bike and she's going across the stream. It's been 2 weeks and she's doing all this.
For the audience, what I loved is there's people who now have taglines. There was one little girl that was like, "We did it for Meryl," and she sent in her riding a bike in honor of your daughter. So now she's got like taglines and shout out. She's going to have a cult following soon.
Yeah, a lot of local CBS affiliates want to interview her. So yeah, like I say, my career is over and hers is beginning.
What I love that Emmett said in one of your episodes, and I agree with him. He said that you need to get a sponsor of a tissue brand.
Yes.
And I cannot agree with Emmett more. Because some of your pieces gut punch in a great way. They're so emotive. So what do you think about
a Kleenex ad or something like that?
Yeah, we need a Kleenex ad for sure.
It's interesting because it's never been my intention to make people cry. I've actually been trying my whole career to bring joy, but the twain do meet sometimes and we get happy tears, which is probably the greatest. I have always felt it's the greatest human emotion, not far behind love.
Absolutely.
Is overwhelming joy or happy tears. Just as an aside, I once did a story on a little girl who lost her pet giraffe, a little stuffed giraffe. It wasn't a pet giraffe, it was a little stuffy. And the family was moving, and about a month later they found it, and they put the little stuffed giraffe in the refrigerator so that she could pull it out. You know, they were rolling a camera at the time, and when she went in to get her juice box, they were gonna, you know, she'd find the giraffe, and they had a camera rolling. And so she finds this giraffe after a month, and first, you know, she's overjoyed, and then her face goes slack, and she looks at her mom and she says, "Why are my eyes watering?" You know, she had discovered that great human emotion, you know, overwhelming joy, which news has normally not done a very good job with. We're good with fear and with anger, but overwhelming joy has not been the strong suit of most network newscasts. And that's what I try to bring. So I'm trying to make people happy, but Emmett has a good point that in the end there are some tears quite often, and that's okay because they're happy tears.
Happy tears. Well, I love that you are doing a service, a new service, during a pandemic that persists, because often the story is, if it bleeds, it leads. The Nightly Nudes opens with the counter. You know, we just reached over a million people with COVID-19 in America. The state of New York, where you live, was the apex. And so I love that we can get news from you that gives us those happy tears, that nourishes our soul.
Without commercials, too. I've been wanting to provide the stories to teachers for a long time. As you know, we've talked about it a lot. With CBS, there was always a little bit of a hurdle because they're a company. They wanted to make money. The pandemic seemed to change the mentality there. Instantly, when I said I want to do this class, I want to offer it for free. No commercials. We don't advertise to kids. After a couple years of pushback, no pushback at all. And we launched the Kindness 101 classes. So it's changing people for the better. Now, we have new people at CBS News that weren't there before, so that's probably part of it. But I also think that people are just, you know, even network news executives are looking to be better and to do the right thing.
And they also have children. I love that Nora O'Donnell, your colleague on the CBS Evening News on Friday nights, they have children. They have cousins and nieces and nephews. And so whatever you are providing, hopefully your colleagues in the CBS world also see the value for kids who have online school.
Yes, and they are my executive producer. His kids are watching, and some of the other producers at CBS News, their kids are watching. So yeah, I think everybody sees the value, and I'm hoping this goes on after life gets back to whatever normal is. Because you know, my next class is about purpose, which my daughter Meryl described as the thing that you do to help others that is unique to you. And I went into journalism because finding truth and sharing truth, I thought would be my purpose. But as I get deeper and deeper into my career, I think my purpose is to take the stories that we've done and to repurpose them for teachers. Because I started hearing anecdotally from teachers years ago that they used these stories in the classroom to teach character education. And then I'd get stopped in airports and I'd get stopped on the street, teachers and students. And unbeknownst to me, they were getting used in the classrooms all the time. And it was hearing that each time I hear it, it is the greatest honor because, you know, as you mentioned, I've won Emmys and lots of awards, but nothing compares to a teacher who takes something that I've done and decides it's worthy of sharing to a classroom. I'm not going to cry on your podcast because I don't, I make people cry. I don't cry myself, but it is incredibly powerful when I hear that, and it has become my purpose.
Mm. Well, we educate educators, and every educator that I have educated that has the trademark Freedom Writer Teacher has been schooled by Steve Hartman. We had the honor of meeting you in March 1998, which is going to date both of us. And you did an amazing story for CBS Los Angeles about the Freedom Writers. It was their senior year. It aired on the Monday of March Madness. And that particular episode has been embedded into our documentary. And so you have been a part of our story.
That's amazing.
For over 20 years, Steve. So everyone that knows us has seen your recordings, your stories, and Freedom Writers can quote you verbatim.
And I can say that I'm one of the few people out there who is actually in room 203.
It was mayhem, wasn't it?
It was mayhem. It was mayhem. But it's one of those things, like, sometimes you wish you could go back in time and, like, go in history and be someplace. Like, when the first cell phone was made, to be on that street corner, could you imagine and see the guy making the cell phone call in New York City? Or when the Post-it note was invented in Minnesota, to be there when that guy did it. Well, I was there in that classroom as it was happening. It's a great memory for me. And, you know, I just can't believe I was there. And I got to not only hear about it, because normally reporters get to hear about things that are history, but I got to be in the setting and I got to see you in all your glory, which still carries on today, 20 years later. The glory is still there.
Your episodes have evolved in the way that any great teacher evolves. Your very first episode was Monday, March 23rd. Each of your classes, like you said, is between 20 and 30 minutes. And what you do so beautifully with your theme and your faculty members, specifically our sweet Meryl and Emmett working the camera, is you cue up this incredible theme and stories that illuminate that theme. So take us back to Monday, March 23rd, because it was live. And with live, there are glitches. With live, there's the anxiety. With live, teachers face that every moment of every day. Take us back to your first day as Professor Hartman, March 23rd.
It was nerve-wracking because I don't know how to teach. My mother was a teacher. She taught me seventh grade. So I lived with a teacher. But standing up there in front of the class, or, you know, on Facebook as I was, is a really nerve-wracking experience, as everybody listening knows. People think that what I do can be nerve-wracking because there's millions of people, but it's different because it all can get edited. But a teacher who's talking to you live, you know, it's a whole different nerve-wracking experience. And then I also had the added disadvantage of having no idea what I was doing. We have a community of educators that use the stories in the classroom. It's a Facebook community that we call On the Road for Educators. And they share ideas on what stories to show to teach kids this or that. So I reached out to that group for some suggestions. But it's a whole different thing to be there. And there were lots of problems and lots of mistakes. But it's been a progression. I mean, I just keep plugging away at it and asking for help. And I'm surprised at what I'm learning. The one thing I've learned is that teachers do not make enough money, because this is really hard. Really hard.
I love how it is morphed and evolved. Is initially it was going to be a week, 4 days. And on your fourth day, you actually had a mortar board that you donned and told Meryl what a mortar board was. And it was going to be like graduation day. And during those 4 days, you gave this incredible assignment, a homework assignment to your viewers of an everyday hero. Write to a hero, send us a picture, have your parents videotape it. And it was so popular, at the end of that week, the demand was, we want more. The cry was, we need more. So talk about that first week in which you envisioned just doing those four lessons of character, empathy, friendship, and altruism. And at the end, we needed more.
Yeah. Because I still have to do my day job. I still have a segment every Friday night on the CBS Evening News that has to get filled. So this is above and beyond. But like any passion, you know, you find time for it. And it mattered to people, so it mattered to me. And I saw my kids getting something out of it. I could not keep going live like that because we kept getting booted off Facebook and then we have to restart. And oh my gosh, it was a nightmare. I couldn't do that. But I promised the kids that were attending the class that I would do it once a week through the end of the school year. So I'm committed to June. And then I don't know. People are saying, you got to keep going. We need this. But now I know why teachers need summers off. This teacher needs a summer off. I just don't know if I can keep doing it.
But in that exhaustion and insecurity and imposter complex that all teachers go through, talk about the satisfaction when it's like a drop the mic moment, when you know that you've made that bridge or that connection to that particular theme.
That's a great point. Let me first talk about the imposter syndrome, because I definitely feel that. And that should be a class in itself, because I feel like an imposter even talking to you right now. I don't deserve to be talking to Aaron Grewell. There's got to be a lot more important people out there who, you know, you could be talking to. But I take a lot of comfort in the fact that everybody feels imposter syndrome. And I imagine teachers on their first day get up there and figure there's got to be somebody better to do this than me. What am I doing here? And they should also take some comfort in the fact that that everybody, probably even you, on the first day thought, what am I doing here? I do not deserve
today.
To be here. Today?
Oh my God, Steve. We call them freedom forums. They're every Wednesday. And we had our first live today. I had like a mini meltdown like 3 minutes before it started, literally. I was terrified. I was as terrified today in real time as I was the first day I walked into room 203.
It never goes away, does it?
It never goes away.
It drives you. I've come to accept it. As much as I've hated it, my imposter syndrome, for years and years, I've come to accept it and embrace it because, one, like I said, I think everybody's got it, but it also, it keeps you on your toes because you feel like you've got something to prove. I always tell young journalists that you have to hate your work or somebody else will. You have to really be critical and find your faults because that's what keeps you good and makes you better. So I've learned to embrace that.
What I love that you're doing in this work is you're so transparent and honest. And part of your lessons have been looking at yourself. I loved the lesson on honesty when cute little Steve Hartman got rid of his sandwich in the bushes. And when your mother asked you, how was your peanut butter jelly sandwich today? You weren't honest.
Yeah, that's the first time they'd heard that story. And I told a couple examples of times I wasn't honest. That story was, I was coming home from school and I didn't eat my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And, you know, I'm about to go in the door and I go, oh, my mom's not going to be happy. So I took the thing and I put it in the bush in the front yard. How I thought it was going to, where it was going to go from there, I don't know. But I went inside and she must have seen me put it there because she sends me upstairs to wash my hands. And then I come back down and she says, did you eat your peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And I was like, absolutely. Yes, yes, definitely. She goes, open your lunchbox. And I open it and it's back in there. And it was so embarrassing. And I can still hear my brothers laughing. But it was a lesson about honesty. And I also told the story about the time I stole something from a store.
I love that story. Share that.
Well, I stole something from a store as a kid. And years later, it was probably 20 years. This is as a young adult. I just started thinking about it. And I wanted to fix it because, I don't know, I just wanted to, be a better person. I thought it was something that I could do to be a better person. So I wrote a letter to the store and wrote a check and they cashed it. I never heard back from the store, but they did cash the check. So I wanted to make amends. And I told that story because I think sometimes people feel like, kids feel like if they're dishonest, well, that's water under the bridge. But no, it doesn't have to be. You can fix a dishonesty, mostly by apologizing.
Well, I think that's part of the mantra of what Kindness 101 is all about, because you introduce this to the world by talking about creating good, strong characters, which ironically was your very first theme, was character.
And it was the first theme for a reason, because I believe that if kids come out of school, middle school especially, with good, strong character, if they have integrity, if they're honest, if they're kind, it doesn't matter if they know the state capital of South Dakota. They're going to find success and friends and love. Things will just fall into place. Not that those other things aren't important, but this is the key element to success, I believe. And that's why I'm so excited about doing these classes. And what I get out of it, you asked me this question earlier and I never quite got around to answering it. As a teacher, being able to not only just tell stories about people who exemplify these things, but to be able to frame them in such a way that kids can take a lesson, that's the joy of teaching that you know so well. You've known for 20 some years and I've known for 2 weeks, but it's such a kick to be able to hear from a student and say, you know, that changed me. And I'm starting to hear all that already. I can't imagine what a teacher who does this day in and day out for decades, you know, what they hear and what they feel. But it's got when your last day comes, you got to be satisfied. How could you not be?
you showcase that. There was in your gratitude lesson,
yes,
you showed that wonderful teacher who was stern and a disciplinarian in Oklahoma, and he had 900 students. And that was one of the stories that made me weep. And they got together and they reassembled. And 300 of them threw a party for him. They stood on a stage and they sang. So what was that like to realize that those great teachers also need great accolades?
They don't need great accolades. They don't ask for great accolades, but they appreciate them when they get them. A great teacher doesn't really need a thank you, at least the great ones that I've known, but they appreciate them when they hear them. This was a guy who taught, we had a choral group, and you know, it was just a kids singing, but they were excellent. And they, for whatever reason, loved this teacher. I mean, loved this guy. And he was not a nice guy. I mean, he was stern. I mean, but it was love. And they felt the love. And they came back from three different countries from all across America to surprise him and put on a concert for him. And yeah, I still cry when I watch that story too.
A lot of your guests from the On the Road, initially and now part of your Kindness 101, they too are teachers. Can you tell us about the delightful girls who claim that they are not best friends? They're not just sisters. They are twins.
This was a white girl and a black girl who went to preschool or kindergarten together. And they were absolutely convinced that they were twins. They have different mothers and fathers, but they thought they were twins because they were roughly the same height and they liked the same things. And they had a few other similarities until one day at a birthday party, some kid breaks the news to them that they're not twins. And one of the girls stood up and faced down that kid and said, "We are two twins because we share the same soul." Mm. And I love the lesson that they sometimes kids teach without even thinking, most of the time without even thinking, with just a few short little words and a little bit of courage. It's a great story about acceptance and what family really is. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Steve, what I'd love for you to do is take us to the end of that first week, because you actually assigned homework and your students were dutiful and they did their homework. And on that Friday night, you were going to showcase Everyday Heroes. So for every teacher who wants to know your secret, how do you get kids to do their homework? Tell us about what you assigned and what you got.
Well, the way to get kids to do homework is to tell them that their homework will be on national television. That is a strong motivator, I have learned. Because every assignment since then, we haven't had quite the response. But I asked them to think of an everyday hero, couldn't be their parents, and say thank you in some way. Write a note or make a phone call. A lot of kids nowadays are not that good on the phone. They just not good talking to strangers. So I thought, you know, making a phone call would be a good idea too. And they just had to say thank you. And they did get on national TV. Unfortunately, I'm guessing a lot of the teachers listening probably don't have national TV programs that they can put the homework on. So I don't have any other advice.
When you showcased Everyday Heroes, what I love was the little girl with the rake with the sanitation workers. That was just a beautiful moment in time. So tell us about some of the photographs you received and the letters that were written to those everyday heroes.
Let's talk about that one, because this was a girl. I wanted them to thank people that you just would never think of thanking, that go unthanked most of the time, but that were keeping the country running, especially in those early days. And one girl chose her sanitation worker. So maintaining proper social distancing, she taped a little thank you note to the end of a rake, reached it up high into the cab of that truck and handed it to this guy. And in the video, all we really see is just him smiling, and he seems very sincere, but you can't see, you know, you can't see his expression that well. But we did track him down, and we did an interview with him, and we did learn that he took that note and he framed it, and it's in his apartment right now because it was his first thank you, and it meant a lot to him. And when we talked earlier about like the impact a teacher can have, when an assignment like that gets a result like that, you know, it's a good feeling, a better feeling than I get, you know, in my regular day job.
One of the things you do so brilliantly and on the road and also in Kindness 101 is you showcase those that serve in sacrifice. So I love some of the stories where there was great loss and yet the children pay it forward. There's that beautiful note that was written to a serviceman. Can you tell that story? It's exquisite.
So this is a kid in Toledo, Ohio, my hometown, who had been taught at an early age to pay it forward. So he walked into a Cracker Barrel restaurant, and on the way in, he found a $20 bill in the parking lot. And his first thought was that he would get a video game with it. And then he watched an airman walk in, and his dad was in the military. His dad had actually died in Iraq. And so he took the $20 bill, and he wrote out on a bright green Post-it note that he likes to pay it forward. He found this $20, and he told the airman, "This is your lucky day," and handed it to the guy. So we did a story on that and just that really sincere act of generosity. And that story went viral many times over. And that $20, the airman gave that $20 away. And as a result of the story, people donated $2 million to Gold Star Charities, groups that help kids who lost a parent in war. And you know, that's a good feeling. It doesn't quite reach the level of the feeling I get when my teaching lessons are executed, but it was a good feeling. Mm.
Another great feeling is Preston, and I'm an English teacher, and so your alliteration of the Pied Piper of patriotism made me very happy. But you talked about Preston, who always says, "Thank you for your service." Can you paint a picture for our listeners of the Pied Piper of patriotism?
This was a story that I used to teach the gratitude lesson. And of course, gratitude, real gratitude, is a lot more than thank you. But what I liked about Preston was he was saying thank you to veterans in a cemetery, deceased veterans. He went to see his grandpa's grave one day and noticed there was no flag there. And he thought that was wrong. And so he got a whole bunch of flags and he started going around his grandpa's cemetery. When that was filled, he went to the next cemetery over and he kept going from cemetery to cemetery in blazing hot weather and pouring rain. Because when I asked him, "Why are you out here in the pouring rain?" he says, "Because the soldiers were out here in the pouring rain." And I like that story, and I showed that story because to me it was a great example of true gratitude, because it's not always just a thank you, just because thank you can be a reflex. True gratitude requires action a lot of times and it requires sacrifice. And this young boy was making sacrifice every weekend, giving up his weekends to go plant flags around cemeteries.
With a lot of your stories, the way they start is not how they end. It's an individual showing their strong moral character. And then because you air that story, it multiplies. So with the $20 becoming $2 million in donations, talk about what Preston now faces every weekend. How many graves has he gone to in cemeteries, but also the ripple effect?
Well, after people started hearing about him going to the cemeteries, others started showing up when they heard he was going to be at a cemetery. So it's not just him anymore. Now when he shows up someplace, there might be 30 or 40 people, a lot of them veterans themselves. And what I love is they go up to the cemeteries, they put the flag down, they salute the grave, and they say, "Thank you for your service," just like Preston did. And I found that a lot with kind deeds. There is an exponential growth that happens sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes if you hit just the right note, they do multiply. And just a quick story about my favorite example of that. There was a guy who was, this is going back about 40 years ago. He was down on his luck and he was traveling through Houston, Mississippi. And he was going to go into a diner there. And his plan was to eat and run. So he ordered the biggest breakfast on the menu. And he was about to leave. The owner of the restaurant came up behind him, reached down to the ground and said, "I think you dropped this." And it was a $20 bill. And at first, the guy who's down on his luck, living out of his car, by the way, he said, "Okay, thank you." Yeah. And he paid for his meal and drove off. And about halfway, you know, out the door, he realized this was no accident. That guy knew that I was broke. And he vowed that day, if I ever get rich, I will pay it forward. He did get rich, and he started every Christmas to give away $100 bills to random strangers on the that he meets in bus stations and in thrift stores. He gave away $1 million. When he died, another guy took it over. Now every holiday, he goes out and gives away $100 to random strangers. They've given away about $2 million together, just people to people down on their luck that they find in thrift stores and bus stations and on the sidewalk. And it all happened because of one act of kindness, one $20 bill. And that ripple effect, I've seen it a couple times. I saw it with the $20 bill in the Cracker Barrel parking lot. Those are just magical moments, and I live for stories like that.
You know, as a viewer of Your Kindness 101, the stories I love the most are when it's a community. You're in this time of hashtag alone together, and we're self-quarantining. I love these stories where there's a little girl who is deaf, and the entire community of Newton, Massachusetts, decide to do what for this little girl, Sam?
Yeah, she would walk through the neighborhood, and she would try to sign to people in the neighborhood. And, of course, they didn't know how to talk to her. But they decided they would change that, and they got together, and they started taking sign language classes as a group, the whole neighborhood. We're talking like 40 different people, not just one or two neighbors, but like the whole neighborhood was doing this. And what's really most unusual about that, and I did not realize this till we started reporting the story, is a lot of times, if you have hearing parents with a deaf child, sometimes the parents don't even learn sign language. So here we had just random neighbors learning sign language. And that story stands out to me because for the reasons that you said, it's just community and how it takes a village. And sometimes when the village gets it right, just beautiful things happen.
The village got it right with Quinn. Can you tell the audience about Quinn and his makeshift village?
That's a very similar story. This is a kid who had cancer, and for a brief while, he just could not go out, kind of like the situation we're in now. He couldn't leave the house because he was immune suppressed. So the window, his front window, was his window on the world, and it started again with just one or two acts of kindness. Some people would come by and maybe juggle in front of the window, or maybe do some zany skit. And as word got out, police cars came by. High school production companies would do their plays on his front lawn. Dance companies would come by. And this kid had a show going on outside his front window every hour on the hour, you know, for as long as he was in that house. And again, it was a community coming together, and it's really us at our best. And I've learned that this is what most of America is. I mean, I find these stories that are really, you know, above and beyond and extraordinary, but they're really not all that unusual. I can't get to all the stories that are out there that are examples of kindness and generosity and it taking a village. I think most Americans are heroes. They're just waiting for their moment. And sometimes when they've got a Quinn or a Sam, you know, as their neighbor, that's the time when they step up. That's their moment.
But you also showcase ordinary kids, like the kids at Boca Raton, We Dine Together. And can you talk about, for every kid that wishes they had that cafeteria to go to or could be at school with their friends and they're at home, and for a lot of kids that lunch may be the only meal they eat all day if they're on free and reduced lunch. You showcased kids.
This is one of the stories that a lot of teachers who use our stories as part of their character education or to spur a discussion, they like to show this story. This was a group of kids at a high school in Florida who just started thinking about the kids that were eating alone and thought it was wrong and decided to fix it. So they started a club called We Dine Together. And they would patrol the campus and find those kids eating alone and sit and eat with them. And these were the cool kids. These were the football players, the really popular kids who decided as a group that this is who they were. This is what they wanted to be. This is what they stood for. And that club, that concept has spread, I think, to all 50 states. And it was a great idea just launched by a group of kids in Boca Raton, Florida.
Can you tell us, there's a story that actually made me laugh out loud. Many of your stories are so witty, so quirky, but it was a very honest Girl Scout. Can you tell our audience about the very honest Girl Scout?
Yes, she was honest, and she had tried all the Girl Scout cookies that she was to sell. And some of them didn't sit too well with her, so she wrote a little review that she passed out to at least one customer, but it went viral, and lots of others saw it. For example, there's a cookie, I don't know if it's still out there after what she did to it, but there's a cookie called
the Toffee-tastic or
the
something
like that? The Toffee-tastic, which she described, I believe, as a gluten-free wasteland, and just slammed this cookie.
I think she equated it to like dirt or sand.
Dirt, yes, yes, yes. Tasteless as dirt, something like that. And there were a couple others that she just was basically saying, do not buy this cookie, whatever you do. And she believed in truth in advertising. So with that as her mantra, she went out to sell cookies. And in the end, she sold more Girl Scout cookies than anybody else in the history of the Girl Scouts because of her honesty and how people miss that. And they certainly, they'd like to see more of that in the large corporations. And they wanted to send her a message that this is the way you should be living your life.
I love how you asked her if anyone actually bought the Toffee-tastic box of cookies. And what was her response?
My grandma bought one box. My initial response was for her dog. And she said, no, she bought it, but she gave it to a friend that had a gluten allergy. So yeah, that's the only box of Toffee-tastics she sold, but she sold Thin Mints through the roof.
I love you with Meryl. You guys have this great kind of rat-a-tat-tat. It's just a fun rapport to watch. But when you were trying to explain to her gratitude, you had your list of 10 things. And I love that chocolate chip cookies and warm chocolate chip cookies were both in your top 10.
Yes.
I thought that was really clever.
Well, I feel like that the chocolate chip cookie is nature's perfect food, and it deserved to be on there twice, and she did not think so. And I put that on there. No, I go, I bet you she catches this, and sure enough, she did. You know, she's right on top of me. Like I say,
she's a taskmaster.
She's a great co-teacher.
You need to give her a ruler. That would be kind of fun to see what she would do with that ruler to any defiant students.
Right. Yeah, that's a good idea, but a bad idea.
Steve, in the world of journalism, how were you able to create this incredible niche of showcasing the best of humanity at a time when often we see the worst in humanity?
Well, as you know, I've been working on this for a long time. I've believed in this for a long time. Ever since I met that young teacher, Aaron Gruwell, long, long ago. And that was my finest hour at that time. That story obviously did very well. I understand they made a movie about that. I'm not really sure. it helped show me we need more of this. I was doing a lot of silly, goofy stories at the time for the local affiliate in L.A. But that story struck a nerve, struck a chord in viewers and in me. And, you know, I started to do more and more of those. And I decided that's mostly what I want to do. Now, I'll still do some funny stories every now and then because, you know, just to shake it up a little bit. But my bread and butter, the reason that I go to work every day is to find those little things that show the real America, not the America that necessarily is seen in the first 22 minutes of the newscast. The real America to me is those everyday people doing extraordinary things. Their lives are centered often around faith and family, and they're just being darn good people. And I find stories that seem that celebrate them.
When you're thinking of your themes for your Kindness 101, do you come up with the themes? Is it a family decision? Does Meryl have ultimate say?
Meryl does not have ultimate say. We haven't gotten there yet. That'll probably be next week. But as of now, I still have some control over the classroom. I've come up with the themes. Again, I reached out to our On the Road for Educators Facebook group and asked them for some suggestions because they've been using these stories for years in their classrooms and they've been structuring them around themes. So they've been my crutch and they're the ones that kind of helped me come up with the themes. But they also need to resonate with me, things that I think, you know, kids really need. And they have to be things that I know I have stories that go with that theme.
What I love, though, is your introductions are fantastic. And I love, this is the true teacher in you. the word altruism is a really big word. You could have chosen something that was easier. And every day you would banter with Meryl that it's coming and we'll figure out what that means by day four. But the way you described and demonstrated altruism was with licorice. It was magical. So tell our listeners how you took this very complex word for a very beautiful action and how you brought it to life.
Well, as I tried to explain to the kids, altruism is like when you have a piece of licorice. And if you give it away, well, you might think that you have no licorice left. But it's like giving away a piece of licorice, and then you've got two. When you do something kind for somebody, when you're altruistic, when you're giving a piece of yourself away, you're not left with less, you're left with more. And then you've got two pieces of licorice, you give those away, and all of a sudden you've got four. It's the craziest thing. And Meryl and I were both giggling about that, but that is altruism. That's what it's all about. And that's the beauty of it. You know, it is doing things for other people, but there's no sacrifice involved. Everybody wins all the way around.
Well, I think for you, honestly, this entire Kindness 101 is altruism at its finest. We are the beneficiaries. And I know you're taking your time and your talent and your treasure, which is your day job, and providing for all of us who are at home, for all of those parents, for all of those teachers. So did you have any idea this would be such a smashing success at a time when we needed it most?
No, I never thought I'd be getting letters from overseas from students in other countries taking this class. I never thought that my kids would even want to be part of it. I never thought Aaron would want to talk to me about it. I could never imagine any of the things that have happened. But it is a dream come true. It is bigger and more important than any award I've ever won. Because as you know, and everybody listening to this knows better than anyone, being able to connect with a kid and make them better in some way, whatever way, is as good as it gets. And I'm having much more success with this than with my own children. My kids don't listen to me much at all. But for some reason, when you become a teacher and they're not your kids, you start to be able to make a difference. And I'm starting to notice even my own kids, like they're paying a little more attention to me and listening to my lessons. So this has been a win-win-win-win-win.
Of all of the stories you've showcased thus far in Kindness 101, do you have a particular favorite that just when you think about what you set out to do, and the lessons intrinsic in your original On the Road segment, is there one that just speaks out to you?
The one that I like for education purposes more than any others is Gerald, the kid on the swim team who could not swim.
I love that one. Oh my gosh. Please, please tell the audience about that one.
This is just to give you a sense for how much I respect this kid. After the interview, I asked him to move in with my family because I just was hoping he could rub off on my kids and they could have a little bit of the magic that he had, because this kid got it. He was a great athlete and he could have played on the basketball team, the soccer team, the football team. He chose to join the swim team because he couldn't swim. And he got in there and he tried to race and he could barely make it across the pool. It was not a very good swim team, so they took everybody that wanted to be on the team. That's how he got on in the first place. But he got better and better and better, and he eventually took his team to state. And what I love about him is you ask him, why did you do this? There were much easier paths for you to go if you wanted to be a great athlete. And he says, you know, you have to watch the story so you can get his quote exactly. But he says, how could I ever be a success in life if I'm not willing to risk failure? And something to that effect. And to be able to understand that, which to me was so profound, and to discover that on his own, that's pretty much the key to life. You know, that sums up everything if you want success, you know. And that's one of my favorite stories. And I want my kids to have some of that. I want every kid in America to have some of that. You know, Gerald just needs to, we need a little Gerald in all of us.
Another one of my favorite stories was, because you deal with everything in the here and now, but you also nudge, nudge, wink, wink to miracles among us, those acts of grace. And I would love for you to share that beautiful story of that coach who had an idea that they were, each of the basketball players were going to write a name on the ball for who they were going to play that final game for. I thought that story was just phenomenal.
Yeah, this was a coach. It was like a dedication game. And everybody wrote a name of somebody that they were playing for that night on the basketball. And there was one kid who had lost a good friend to cancer. Both kids had cancer. And this was the survivor. They were very good friends. And he wrote his friend's name on the basketball. And so they were playing that night. And, you know, you ascribe what you will to what happened. But it came down to the end of the game. This team needed a half-court shot to win the game. And sure enough, the kid made the shot, and he thinks that it was his friend, the name on the basketball, that allowed that shot to go in. So, yeah, that's one of those that's hard to talk about without getting kind of emotional, because it was such a big moment for them and big moment for that kid, big moment for the game, and it's another great message.
But a big moment for those who watch. I love how in that scene you see the entire crowd just erupt. And for those of us who are at home and we're not going to be going to basketball games in the foreseeable future, we're not going to be in those arenas. You can't help but have your spirit soar when you see that.
Yeah. It's interesting watching these stories in this time because they do take on a different meaning. You know, I miss some things, as you're saying, I miss some things about life that I see in these stories. But the spirit is still there. It's just coming out of us in different ways. We're not going to basketball games and we're not witnessing miracle shots, but the miracles are still happening just in different ways.
Absolutely. One of my final questions for you that I love is, as a teacher, Professor Hartman, each of us at home watching you, we can be lifelong learners. So we could be the four-year-old President Austin. We could be the middle school student, the Girl Scout, or we can have served and sacrificed to our country. But what you showed us is it's never too late to learn. So can you tell us about that dear veteran who served in World War II, but was burdened with a secret, and you were able to showcase the success?
This was a guy named Ed Bray, who had all kinds of medals on his war. One of the medals said, "Victory in Europe." I asked him to read what it said, and he couldn't, E-U-O-R-P-E, he couldn't read Europe. And he had basically, through his entire life, faked his way through. His wife would read things for him. People at work would read things for him. He was illiterate, all the way into his 90s. And he decided, I should say, he didn't really decide. A teacher decided that it was time for him to read. He kind of begrudgingly went along, and he learned how to read, you know, at 92 or something like that. And he read a little book about George Washington, and it was the biggest thing in his life, because he'd said being illiterate was the hardest thing he ever had to deal with. And I reminded him he'd been at Normandy. He goes, "Yeah, this is harder." And a teacher stepped forward and had the patience to sit down with him, and it took a lot of patience because he would get angry and mad, and there was a lot of, "I can't do this," but this was a very good teacher who had all the patience in the world and didn't give up on him. And she put a lot of time into teaching him, but there was a huge reward at the end. I mean, you see him crying when he finishes the book, because he never in a million years thought that he'd be able to do that. So it's never too late. It's never too late to do whatever you feel like you can't do. Even if you feel like you can't be a teacher, you can go out and you can start Kindness 101, and you might actually have some success at it.
Well, as you could tell, I took these lessons very seriously, Steve. I can't wait to go back and rewatch every episode. For those that are listening that feel that we gave away the ending of every great story, what you need to see are these stories coming to life. The aha moments, the glimmers. Have tissue in hand that hopefully at some point will be sponsored by Steve Hartman, because they really do tug at you and they just make you proud of humanity. So as a homework assignment to our listeners in over 70 countries, many of whom you've probably visited, what can you leave us with as a homework assignment to be citizens of the world?
Well, they're doing the greatest homework assignment I could possibly give them, and that's just make a difference in somebody's life. I mean, they've chosen the right profession. If I had to do over again, it's probably the profession I would choose, to be honest with you, because I see a lot of people making a lot of great strides, you know, but I don't think there's anybody doing more for the world than teachers. And I'm a little jealous. I'm intimidated, but also jealous that you guys get to do it all the time. The one thing I would leave is never be afraid to step outside your comfort zone. All the great growth spurts I've had in my intellectual life and my emotional life have been when I've tried something hard, like Gerald. I've never done anything quite like that, where I jump in the swimming pool not knowing how to swim and pretend I'm going to be on the swim team. But I have done things that are hard for me, and I've stepped outside my comfort zone. And I think we always need to keep doing that, because it gets harder and harder, especially as you get older and older. It gets set in our ways. You try to teach me some bit of technology, and I will resist because I'm 57 years old now. But I remind myself, you know, you've got to do it. You've got to keep trying hard things.
I'm so grateful for Steve for teaching one to teach another. And may he teach you as well. My homework assignment to you, dear listeners, is to join Steve Hartman and me on our Freedom Forum series Wednesday, May 6th. This is a great opportunity to interact with Steve in real time as we go live on Facebook and ask Steve questions from teachers all over the world. In honor of the hope that Steve Hartman's Kindness 101 imparts, may we show love to the people in our communities. May we have the strength to step outside our comfort zones to experience the joys of life. And as Steve Hartman highlights each week on the Road, may we all work to make a difference in the lives of others. I know that many of you are sheltering in place, so from our Freedom Rider family to yours, we hope that you stay safe, stay strong, stay healthy, and stay hopeful. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. I hope that you will join us on May 6th for our Freedom Forum with Steve Hartman on Facebook Live. But until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.